first case for argument is Midlock. This is Apple Vacation.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning, judges. May it please the court. Frank Despina of Kramer Copan Shaughnessy and Spina, representing appellant, I guess respondent, William Kramer. As Your Honors know, this is an appeal from Rule 11 sanctions entered by Judge McDade in the Central District. The first issue I'd like to address very briefly, unless Your Honors have more questions, is whether or not you have jurisdiction over this appeal. That's a question that's been raised by our opponents, and I suggest it's very clear that we do. Our initial appeal, which was filed from the first order of Judge McDade, which simply assessed fines, was dismissed by this court on its own motion after briefing. And in that motion, the plaintiffs, in fact, argued that that appeal was premature. Judge McDade then entered an order on March 30th of 2003 or 2004, extending the deadline for the filing of our notice of appeal to 30 days after the final order on the attorney's fees portion of the issue was entered. And we did, in fact, file that appeal on time. So I would suggest to this court that there is no issue of jurisdiction. This appeal was timely filed, and it is appropriately before this court on the merits. Turning to the issue of the propriety of Judge McDade's sanction rulings, as Your Honors know, the standard is whether the district court engaged in an abuse of discretion. We suggest that the district court did. We suggest that the position taken by Mr. Kramer in filing the second removal petition on behalf of his clients in the Central District of Illinois was supported by an example.
You've got this dubious idea that if you can find a district court case somewhere in the world, you can rely on it no matter how absurd it is and whether it's been rejected by courts of appeals. That's a complete misunderstanding of the press.
Well, I guess, Your Honor, we don't take it that far. What we suggest is that if there is case... I agree with the general concept Your Honor has stated, but the Sawyer Court has...
The Sawyer Court, look, you can't
just find a district court decision and run with it when it's contrary to appellate precedent.
Your Honor, I don't...
understand
the hierarchical system of courts in which a district court decision cannot trump a court of appeals decision.
But, Your Honor, there are no, at least, cases that we're aware of where this court or any other federal circuit court of appeals has decided that Sawyer was incorrectly decided.
Well, there's another problem here, too, which is that 1440, there is a jurisdiction in this case, although perhaps it does not go to appellate jurisdiction. 1447D is a jurisdiction-stripping statute, and it actually doesn't say only there's no appeal. It bars review on appeal or otherwise. And the Supreme Court has a rather extensive line of cases at this point to deal with this. It really makes no difference at all whether Judge McDade is talking about that or not, because that goes to the subject matter jurisdiction of the district court to entertain the case. And if he was being asked to review otherwise, if you will, Judge Anderson's decision that there was no jurisdiction, that there indeed was jurisdiction here and that the remand was proper, then it's a jurisdictional issue, and 1447D bars anything that any other court could do. It doesn't fall within the Thermtron rule, it doesn't fall within the Things Remembered rule, it doesn't fall within any of the exceptions the Supreme Court has carved out.
And I guess my response to that, Your Honor, is clearly this was an argument that was not based on directly existing law. It was an argument...
deliberately decided to circumvent what would have otherwise happened if you had gone back to the Northern District of Illinois.
Well, and Your Honor, that's where we respectfully disagree with Judge McDade's assessment of what happened. And if you look at the consolidated...
You can't possibly think that
mean, the statute is clear that it's in the Northern District. Right. But I guess the point, Your Honor, and maybe I'm not artfully making it, is the Sawyer case is out there, and granted that it's not a Court of Appeals case, it's not a Supreme Court case, but it's a case that's out there that stands for the proposition that under certain circumstances... I don't think that was the intention here, Judge. I mean, I could see we could... Well, and I guess, Your Honor... I don't know that I... I guess on the Sawyer case, we know that it happened... No, that wouldn't be our position. And, Judge, we can't forget the Sawyer case. Well, apparently based on Judge McKee... I would suggest that no more than the second time, and that's what Sawyer allowed. I'm aware... I'm sorry, Your Honor, I'm not understanding. Well, what I'm saying, and I know Your Honor doesn't like Sawyer, and I understand that, but the perspective is from our standpoint... I guess the rule would be, well, if one bite means a second removal, that under the test or under the circumstances of Sawyer, yes. It's hard to say always, Judge, because there could be a myriad of factual scenarios that you could sit there and say there's absolutely an impossibility to do it here. So I can't, it's hard for me to predict what should... It was a case law interpretation of the statute, Judge, and that's why I know you don't like Sawyer, and I understand that, but it's the assessment of the statute that's given, and the Consolidated Doors Court talks about several other decisions in which similar things have happened, where Rule 11 sanctions were rejected in that case because the court in Consolidated Doors recognized that it was an argument, non-frivolous argument, for an extension of the law. It recognized that there are some cases, Sawyer, Hunt, Seidman, Browning, all of those cited in Consolidated Doors, in which courts, district courts, some circuit courts have recognized that there are limited circumstances in which a second removal can occur. And that was our basis, reasonable basis, and we submit... I'm not sure I can give you a definition across the board, Your Honor. What I'm suggesting is these circumstances were appropriate in our case. I'm really not here to espouse a... What's special about this case is that we believe that, as in Sawyer, Judge Anderson incorrectly decided he had lack of... Well, I suppose in every case in which... I suppose it would be fair to say that in circumstances where the First District Court decided it on lack of subject matter jurisdiction on the issue of fraudulently joined defendants, which is our situation... Well, and I guess the question comes down to, Judge, is an attorney entitled objectively to rely upon a district court decision? Well, and my question...
Because contrary to the language of the statute, contrary to appellate case law, and you can just run them.
But in this case, Judge, I submit Sawyer is not contrary to appellate case law. There's no Seventh Circuit case that we're aware of that has rejected the Sawyer analysis. And if we take a look at the Milwaukee Concrete case, which was this court's decision, and it talks about the fact that the argument is not contrary to existing circuit precedent and therefore was not sanctionable, that's an analysis of, because remember, we're not judging anything other than the objective reasonableness of Mr. Kramer's actions in filing the second removal petition. I'm not saying any argument, but an argument that is supported by precedent that's published, yes. But, Judge, I know that... Well, if it's unpublished, no one's going to know about it, so I don't know how you could rely upon it, but... Right, but they're not properly cited as precedential authority. I guess that's the point I'm making. Reasonable minds can disagree as to whether... Well, I guess, Judge, I would say that I'm not so sure the statute is all that clear, because if it was, we wouldn't have the reams. But, Judge, we wouldn't have the reams of appellate case law. Well, that the Sawyer caught. Well, Judge, I'd have to go and take a look at the Sawyer. I do, Your Honor. I do. Well, because the Sawyer Court determined under the same statute, I guess the language of 1447D that limits the reviewability. Well, certain courts have found there to be some question as to exactly what the scope of that is. Hence, we have various decisions in the various courts of appeals, the district courts, and even the Supreme Court, assessing exactly what the scope of it is. And we even know in the Things Remembered case that there were additional opinions. So the Supreme Court itself was not consistent in its interpretation of what the circumstances were, which comes back to the point that reasonable minds of different individuals can differ. Thanks.
Good morning. Stephen Plant, on behalf of the appellee, Andrew Midlock, Jr. et al. Our concern in this case was the fact that Mr. Kramer did exactly what the court has just pointed out, and that is the fact that he didn't like an unreviewable decision based on 1447D and chose to go to a jurisdiction that had absolutely no bearing or no contact with the underlying case. It violated the venue statute. It also violated the unreviewability of a remand order based on subject matter jurisdiction. And the motivation was that his client was upset with Judge Anderson's ruling, and he admitted that in the actual hearing itself. On page 16 of our brief, we cite to where he got into the discussion with the court. And he says, the judge asked him about the Sawyer case, and he talks about what it means, and the court said, suppose I agree with Judge Anderson, where would you go next? And he said, I would go nowhere, Your Honor. And then the court said, and that's precisely what you should have done before you came here, wouldn't you say? And his answer is revealing. He says, I have to say, Your Honor, that my clients felt very strongly that Judge Anderson was in error in his ruling, and they asked me to exhaust all potential remedies to have that decision examined. He admitted before the court that he was engaging in an improper purpose. A lawyer at some point has to tell his client or her client that they can't do certain things, that the law is against them, that the rules are against them. They have to tell the client that enough is enough. He admitted before the court that his whole purpose in doing the second removal, knowing that the first one was remanded based on subject matter jurisdiction, was an improper purpose of trying to satisfy his client. There were no legitimate means to contest that order, and he was stuck with the ruling as it was. That's what the statute says. He should not have removed it in the Central District, and if we allow this to happen here, we're going to allow forum shopping throughout the state, for that matter, anywhere in the country. And in fact, I indicated that to the court, that that was my concern, that I wanted to make sure that this was the last time we were going to have to deal with this issue of removal to another court, because there's still one district court jurisdiction left in the state of Illinois, and that's the Southern District. I didn't want to be chasing down to Carbondale, or actually East St. Louis, to have to argue this entire matter once again. So, well, or the Virgin Islands, perhaps. So that was our concern, and there was no legitimate basis. And again, the standard of review for purposes of appeal is abuse of discretion, so as long as there's some reasonable basis for the court to have done what it did, the order should be upheld. One other thing that I want to clarify, I don't really understand the argument about the court making a sua sponte decision about remanding the case a second time. In point of fact, item number 16 in the record, we filed a petition for remand within 12 days of the remand that was removal that was filed in the central district. So we did, in fact, cite the jurisdictional basis and the venue basis to the court and ask him in our petition for remand to remand the case a second time because of the fact that there had been a subject matter decision by Judge Anderson in the Northern District. So the judge was ruling on our motion. This was not a sua sponte action on the part of the court. But the court is correct. If it's subject matter jurisdiction, that can be raised at any time, even after a decision has been made, even after a verdict. And the court has the obligation and the right to remand a case or to dismiss a case on jurisdictional grounds at any time. That's not something that's waived. It's not a procedural issue. I have nothing further to argue unless anybody has any questions.
Very briefly, Judge, and thank you for giving me a minute for rebuttal. The point, I think, the only point that needs to be addressed here is the argument on the remand order by Judge McDade was not based on a subject matter jurisdiction. It was based on a venue issue. Those are two distinct grounds. Subject matter jurisdiction is like a diversity in this case. Venue issue is the removal has been brought to the wrong venue. And absolutely true. Our only point is that, well, other than for the form, you're probably right, Judge, but the point is that Judge McDade clearly made his decision on the basis of venue, and that's why we raised that. It's the only point in rebuttal I have, unless you have any other questions.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honors.